Welcome to Polycast, a civilization podcast focused on game strategy.
Canis Albinos,
Makalua,
the Man Team,
Mega Bears Fan.
Hello, Internet, and welcome to a once again live edition of Polycast, this time being episode number 361. I am one of your regular hosts, Mega Bears Fan, along with returning, finally, Canis Albinos.
Hi.
And, of course, Makalu.
Who will probably be playing a lot of Six Guys soon.
And the Mian team.
Dogpiling on the news.
And once again, gracing us with his august presence, Dan Q.
Getting ready to pass go.
Huh? Ooh, you're going to collect $200?
Exactly. Although, really, with inflation, I'm sure it's as good as it used to be, but
well,
I'll take it.
I'm going to ask as an American, Canadian, Australian, because you might want to choose wisely.
You know what? Why choose? I'll just take 200 of each denomination. Thank you. Thank you for the idea, Mackie. I appreciate it. I will spend it wisely.
No, I don't think that's how it works, but okay.
Well, if you buy the American edition and the Canadian edition, I'm sure there's an Australian. There's a Monopoly edition of everything, right? So we've got it covered.
This is why family board game night doesn't happen very often at the Dan Q household.
That's what you think, Jason.
Does Miley play with board games?
Our dog has a very different definition of a board game. Usually it's a game she's no longer interested in, hence a board game.
Huh. Oh, I was going to say, the definition of play as in chew on.
Well, she would never get that opportunity.
Oh.
Famous last words.
Well...
Of course, that's the one thing I didn't copy.
Okay, it's like I was waiting for my cue.
Put the news thing here, because where is that document going?
Hooray for being live again.
Yeah. This is just the thing. We haven't had news in so long that I forgot to copy it over to my handy local file.
To have news is new?
Yeah, to have news is new. Pick it up, Dan.
What, over a year now?
Yeah.
Was September.
Yep. The last new anything officially for Civilization VI was in September of 2019. Let's fast forward, and Phil mentioned famous, last words. Hopefully these are famous words, and they're not the last. Announcing Civilization VI New Frontier Pass downloadable content collection. 4 years to the day of Civilization VI being publicly announced as to exist, we get an update that there are to be not one, not two, three, four, five, but in fact six, count on the internet with me, people, six downloadable content packs for the game between now and next year, plus six additional free updates that will be quote-unquote in between DLC releases. So 1 month you pay, 1 month is free, 1 month you pay. This sounds like another potential type of addiction. But this kind you shouldn't have to get therapy for. We know a little bit about what we're going to be receiving in 5 days as of this recording. That's right. They make the announcement on May 11th, and oh, by the way, 10 days from now, here's your first DLC. It will be the Maya and Grand Columbia pack. Two leaders, two civilizations, apocalypse game mode, new city-states, resources, and more. But first, let's have a look at the rest of the outline. In July, we're going to get the Ethiopia pack, which is going to give us one civilization. One guess what that civilization is going to be.
One Nubia. Leader.
Again? Oh, an alternate leader. Oh, okay.
Yeah, alternate leader.
One leader, Secret Society's game mode, new district and infrastructure. And then, understandably, they're not giving away everything at this point, but in September, November, January, and then March, you've got the 3rd, 4th, 5th, and 6th packs, respectively. All include one or two civilizations or leaders, a new game mode, and quote-unquote more new content. And if you're someone like me that is wondering, does new content include maps? Well, as part of the free updates for all players, we see scenarios, balance changes, and yes, quote-unquote, new maps. Now, some of this DLC has already been disclosed as requiring one or the other expansion pack for the game, and so you're getting kind of the mix and match there. And in addition to talking about the content, because we do know, again, a little bit about the Maya, not so much Grand Columbia just yet, because as of this recording, there has been a first look that was published on the 14th of May to have a look at this new civilization, and Mackie will no doubt fill us in on why she's looking forward to playing the Maya. I'm also looking forward to Mackie trying to pronounce the titles and abilities for us all.
Oh, boy.
She kind of voluntold herself for that. Well done, man. but there's also leading questions in the community about, so what about this model of paying for downloadable content, where it's generally, I like this, I don't like this, and of course the, well, I may or may not like it, it really depends. And there's someone saying, generally the sides are, look, I'm in favor of this because you have an idea of what's coming. You know that if you buy something this month, there's going to be something free for the next month. You can decide to get the pass, pay that up front, and get all of this. Or, presumably anyway, you're going to be able to buy it piecemeal. You can wait till stuff comes out to decide whether you want something or not. You
well,
can,
I guess the really important question is there pricing information yet?
I have not come across pricing information yet, other than to say that the price for the free content, I believe, will be zero. I think that's probably a fair assessment at this point, unless the definition of free in the context of money has changed in the last little while. But really, when you start looking at what they're suggesting, well, I shouldn't say what they're suggesting, what they're telling us is going to be included in general form, it just looks like here's your expansion pack over a period of 12 months as opposed to all up front. Even though clearly because they have this outline, it's not like, well, now that we finished the first DLC, we're going to start working on the second DLC. And, you know, that there's enough here for them to say this is what's going to be included. So clearly there's a plan. It's like a deconstructed expansion pack. And some people are liking that because, okay, at least we're getting more information than we did when Civilization VI came out, and it was, hey, you want to pay for, what was that, 5 or 6 pieces of DLC, and you had absolutely no idea of anything that was going to be included, and some people jumped in, and they wished they had not. Other people were happy that they waited. I feel like that there, personally, I feel like there's enough information here for you to decide, am I interested in buying it up front right now? We also don't know how long the season pass is going to exist in the sense of, you know, after the first DLC is out, can you still buy that? I would assume so. It's just like a subscription for a year, right? And other people are saying, I don't understand why a big publisher like 2K, which owns Developer for Access Games, is asking us to crowdfund their effort. Which, it's like, I'm pretty sure the people... Yeah, I'm pretty sure, you know, the crowdfunding, you're asking someone to pay you so you can make something, but I'm pretty sure this content already exists, and the company is just looking to recoup their investment. And of course, make money on top of that as well, obviously.
Publishers tend to like steady, constant revenue streams as opposed to spike, so.
And in this way, if someone is also having an issue with a particular, you know, DLC pack or even an update, you know, you can only do so much testing behind the scenes and you release it to a larger audience and it's, oh, geez, something broke. Well, we don't have to worry about an entire expansions pack worth of content. Let's just go back and see if we can figure out what it was that we just introduced and figure things out and, you know, iron out the wrinkles and then go on to the next one. Hopefully that's what the idea is. And I think it's also
The other side of that coin, though, is that if you have a bunch of really small, you know, DLCs, then you run into issues with the, you know, different combinations of mixing and matching, where, and I think Paradox has had this issue with, you know, some of its games, where you have some of the DLC, but not others, and then that causes, you know, unique problems that then become even more of a pain in the butt to troubleshoot and fix.
I think
Paradox
that's
fair. Has its own issues.
We all have our own issues, but I get the point.
I don't expect that to happen with this one because it looks like it's mostly just civilizations and like different game modes. The different game modes are going to be self-contained and aren't going to interact, I assume, with the other game modes that are in the other packs. So I don't see that as being much of a problem because new civs are, you know, like you can insert them and remove them from the game. That's what modders do. and you're not going to break the whole game by inserting sieves. So as long as they're not, like, changing game rules or, like, adding, like, different sets of content, like, if they're adding buildings and units and stuff like that into the base game in certain expansion or in certain DLC packs and not others, then I think you might run into some issues where you get unique problems where somebody has one installed but not the other and things like that. But as long as the actual game rules and mechanics aren't changing, I do not foresee that being a strong possibility. So hopefully that won't happen and we'll be safe from that.
And any kind of changes to that may in fact come as part of the free updates for all players.
Yes, perhaps.
Although certainly I think it is fair to say, like, when it comes to 2K and Firaxis, clearly they're, you know, this is being developed in tandem. All these pieces are being developed, obviously some at different stages of completion than others, because, well, this is supposed to be released first, and this is supposed to be released second, et cetera, et cetera. But then it's fair to question, okay, have they tried, you know, when you have the first DLC and the fourth, and what about just the second and the fourth installed? And
right.
Hopefully, kind of as you were saying, Jason, that looking at what they're including, it's the things that are being added is on top of what the game already has. So if you have the DLC, well, you know, it adds new leaders. And if you don't have it, well, then you don't. As opposed to, oh gosh, we just, you know, in this DLC, this is changing this mechanic considerably, and now it's gone and messed something up. And if it's not fixed from the first DLC, then is it just going to be compounded on the second DLC? So I think the fact that we have this outline right now as a consumer, that we can see this, I think the 2K and Firaxis have learned from the experience of Civilization VI initial release, because I do see some people saying, hey, 2K and Firaxis have a good reputation of, you know, not just releasing and forgetting about it, but I also think the community is understandably, we didn't have a lot of information up front. They got burned. You know, we felt that we got burned. And, of course, there's still some lingering criticism of, thanks for checking in, guys. We haven't heard from you, and now there's all this stuff that you want us to try to absorb. But that's just kind of the thing, right? If you really feel like, I'm not certain how I feel about this, is this enough to get me to invest more time into the game, then you can wait. It's not like you must buy now, and if you don't, then you're out of luck.
It was enough for me.
And I think that's also a point as well there, Candace, because some people have said, well, I don't know if this is going to be enough to get, you know, new players into the game. And I'm thinking, really, the information that's being released right now, I don't think this is necessarily going to be enough for someone to say, I've never played Civilization VI. I wonder if this new Frontier Pass is going to convince me to get it. I really feel like this is for the, so you've already bought at least Civilization VI, maybe one of the other expansions, some of the DLC. Here's what else we have for you. And then depending upon how well this goes, particularly the first one, then the people that are already playing the game, you get that word of mouth. That word of mouth is either going to be positive or it's going to be negative. So, which would then, of course, impact future sales, future reception of the game, future potential for gosh knows what may come after this for the game. And as for the player, I think it's also a win because, well, we don't have to wait until, you know, next March for the expansion pack while we sit here and hope for maybe some free updates in the beginning. We have something to look forward to every other month. It's just enough to help keep our attention, and our attention spans are not always the greatest. Firaxis and 2K would like you to start here. and then you can decide whether you want to join them or not. I think the one thing that...
And then buy your pass later, maybe, if you like what you saw. You know, that's a valid option.
And I think we're about to get to specifically what we know about the Maya, but as far as the other things that are coming in DLC 1, again, Grand Columbia, we really don't know much of anything. Civilization Fanatic Center moderator Byte over on the Too Long Didn't Read moviereviews.com has a features thread where he is compiling information that he has found for each of the DLCs, no doubt to be updated on a, or wait, I shouldn't say no doubt, hopefully to be continued to be updated on a regular basis between now and by the time we get to the end of this DLC journey. And what we know of this apocalypse game mode, and I'm quoting from him, a new game mode that includes many new disasters like comet strikes, forest fires, meteor showers, and solar storms. Disasters can be triggered by a new unit called a soothsayer. We're also going to have new natural wonders in the form of the Bermuda Triangle, Pi, I'm just going to call it P.
Pi of Tali.
Pia Patali, and the Fountain of New Fountain of Noobs. No, the Fountain of Youth. That must be something else.
The Fountain of Noobs.
The Fountain of Newth is a computer programming thing, because the C language has a very famous book written by Donald Knuth.
Oh, well, there you go. I had no idea. I mean, yes, I did, and I tested the panel to see if their knowledge and awareness. Well done, Candace. You get an A. There's
plausible.
Teacher Dan is teaching. There's new resources of corn or maize, and then honey, or it's beeswax, new city-state, Vatican City, and then, of course, forest fires, damaged forest tiles, and buildings and wonders in the base game, as well as apocalypse game mode. Oh, I just want to turn the disaster intensity down to zero ever more now.
No, up to four.
Mackie can be in that game. I'll be in this game.
Yeah, I think I'll join Dan's game for a change.
The meteor shower in the base game, as well as the apocalypse game mode. Oh no! New competition, appease the gods. Is this where we have to appease Sid and Ed? I have no idea what they mean by gods. I guess we'll find out.
Don't forget Anton.
And Anton. And then something.
The
about
meteor shower. The meteor shower just puts like an iron resource on the map somewhere.
Yeah, so that's actually not a bad thing. This is the reason I'm maybe when it turns the disasters up just a tad. How many we had where you were missing iron?
Almost all of the disasters in Gathering Storm have that, you know, that give and take of them, where they do something bad, but they also do something good.
Yeah, like the floods make a more fertile, you know, better so farm.
I wouldn't be surprised if the fires have some effect like that, too, where maybe, you know, they make the forests more productive or have more food or something like that. Or maybe they even cause the forest to grow further. Who knows?
They really should. Forests have to burn. Otherwise they, you know,
right.
Die.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of the natural disasters, over on the Well of Souls page, a little bit more on the Soothsayer, that is unit specific to the Apocalypse mode that you can send into foreign territory to trigger natural disasters. So I guess we're having, I'm going to start calling this a little bit of our fantasy game mode, which I admittedly doesn't appeal to me, but I can see how it would appeal to some people. And,
yeah, and that's one of the big hang-ups that I have with this particular model, is I just don't know if I'm going to play any of these game modes. Because even with the you know, base Civ 6 and the expansions, like, I never play the scenarios, like, anyway. Like, I never played the Viking scenario or the I don't even remember what other scenarios we have in
Outback Tycoon.
Yeah, that was the Australia scenario. I think there might have been a scenario associated with the Nubia DLC. I don't remember.
Yeah.
There's the Red Death mode, which we played that once for Turncast, and everybody's like, okay, I'm done.
Yeah, that's a multiplayer one, and I never even play multiplayer, so I never played that either. And then I think there was also some Ancient Wonders scenario in Civ 6, right?
Mm-hmm. That was in Civ 5.
Oh, was it? Okay. See, they blur together. I don't even remember which is which. I played, I think, one or two scenarios in my entire time playing Civ 5, and I don't think I've played any of them in Civ 6 so far. So, yeah, looking at, like, oh, new game mode, like, am I really going to play that? Especially if it is something as fantastical as being able to sic meteor showers on other players.
And I do think that the comment about not playing the scenarios or people playing the scenarios and being disappointed, it may have something to do with the fact that new scenarios for Civ 6 will be part of the free updates. That knows, like, oh, you're going to make me pay for a scenario. No, apparently not. That's not going to exist. They're not going to be a scenario. Red Death is a specific type of game mode. This is something that you can include with the base game or not. And of course, speaking of Anton, actually, in a tweet, again, linked to from the Well of Souls, these are systems and or content additions to a normal game, and you can turn on as many as you want. So the only game modes we know about in terms of title and a little bit of detail, again, is Apocalypse, and there's also the Secret Societies game mode, which apparently are societies that are secret. That's my takeaway right now. I know that's really in-depth and insightful, and it'll take you a while to absorb that.
Man, you don't talk too much. They'll have to kill you.
Not again.
Does this mean secret packs are back in?
Packs of secrecy.
Well, we know who the pact of secrecy against, right?
Uh-huh.
It's the pact of secrecy reborn and brought down on us by a soothsayer. I have no idea. I'm just... Are we getting hate mail yet? Is there any? No? Okay, I'll have to keep working on it.
We did just get right
to the mail. We will continue on our quest for hate mail.
Actually, just as a shout-out on CFC to Socrates and Willowbrook for commenting on episode 360. Of course, it's like, wow, it's great to listen to you guys talk about what might come up as new information. I'm listening to this after you've had a chance to read about this new information.
of course. That's the way it works.
And Carl over on YouTube is like, you guys really are jinxed every time they announce an update or expansion. It's just after you release the show. Well, and see, in this case, they didn't renounce. Please don't take it away. They announced this new DLC on a weekend that we are going to record, as opposed to announcing the new content on a weekend to release an episode. So it's a little bit of an improvement, actually. A little.
This is all new information as of this week. Not as of last week.
For one.
Yes, as we are recording on the 16th of May, 2020. We'll just make that as a relative reference here, someone listening to this like 5 months from now. I was released this week.
Yeah, I joked that we just threw them off because we weren't live last time due to technical difficulties. Which, by the way, was YouTube. YouTube decided to suddenly list it. Apparently it did broadcast, but YouTube decided to make it unlisted instead of public. So, for anyone who might be listening, that's what happened last time. Stupid YouTube.
Oh, I think YouTube can handle that criticism there, Jason. I think that might be one of the kindest things they've been called today, quite honestly.
Probably.
As much as we know about the general overview and understandable speculation of what's coming up, including visual speculation, which we will get to, perhaps we could actually give some more specific content, the specific breakdown of what we learned about the Mayan civilization for Civilization VI. You have to qualify that. This is not a show to talk about the history of the actual Mayan civilization, although I guess some of that is alluded to in what we're about to talk about. I know, Mackie. I know. The Maya. What about them?
Yes, the Maya, led by Ixhuatlan Ahua, also known as Lady Sixth Sky. She has a unique unit, which is a spearman that replaces an archer because it's a thrown spear, and I believe it has more damage to damaged units, and also has a little bit higher strength than the archer it replaces. It also has the Maya also have the observatory district, which replaces the campus and gets adjacency bonuses from farms and plantations, but not anything else. So it's a little bit different.
And it's cheaper to build than a campus.
Well, yeah, all unique districts are plus 50%, aren't they?
It's good to know that that is being carried over still. So yes.
And then the leader bonus is Ixhuatlan Ahua, and I don't actually see what it... Oh, here it is. It gives non-capital cities tiles within 6 tiles of the capital, plus 10% to all yields, and all non-capital tiles receive minus 15% yields, with that of being there more than 6 tiles away from the capital. So the closer to the capital you are, the better.
So basically they want us to go back to doing their ring system of building the cities for the Maya.
Yes. And then the Mayan special ability is the Miab. Settlement, of course, adjacent to freshwater and coast do not provide extra housing. Instead, each farm provides additional plus 1 housing, plus 1 food, plus 1 amenity for every luxury adjacent to a city center. So, in other words, the Mayan don't really care about where you settle their cities in terms of actual geographical stuff. As long as they've got empty tiles near them, they're happy.
And since, unlike past versions of the game, you actually don't need fresh water to build farms, you can hypothetically just build Mayan cities wherever, as far away from water as you want.
You can cram in as many as you can, 6 tiles away, no more than 6 tiles away from the capital, so they'll all count, and then you'll have a bunch of these super productive cities.
And I've seen some people say, oh, this is a return to Tall with the Maya now. Oh, I see how it is. I'm like, well, minus 15% to all yields, it's a percentage. It's not an absolute number. So some people are like, oh, man, this is going to really cripple you early on. Well, I think that's a bit strong. I think it's more about you need to be aware of this. So when you're planning where you're going to settle, keep that in mind. And although I will say it is a much more understandable comment, and we've seen some extremes as well, including the, hey, do you realize this leader animations are the same as the Nubian leaders?
I want to yell at those people.
You know what? If that's how nitpicky you want to be, then I guess Fraxis is doing a pretty darn good job, if that's what you can come up with at this point.
If this is the best complaint you could come up with after watching through this video and stuff, oh no, she has the same... Okay.
They should have given her the same animations as Gilgamesh, probably. That would have been the way to go.
The thing is, she doesn't have the same animations. She has two animations that are the same, and like 8 or 9 that are not. So it's like, oh, well, the idol animations are the same, because they're both more heavy-set women with large bosoms and staffs. I mean, what do you want?
Instead of rereading the whole
Gilgamesh animations, I just said.
It's really what Phil wants, Gilgamesh on everybody.
There's only so many ways the human body can move, and when they don't have people in their studios actually with access to super high tech stuff, they might have a problem doing that. What with the recent quarantines and such.
As long as they don't try to sell us the rest of her animations later, I think I'm okay with it.
That would be different, yes.
Lady Six Guy After Dark animations. Wait, what?
Okay. Jeez. But I am going to fanfic her for. Yeah, honestly, I am going to say that I'm kind of reminded of India from Civilization V, where everyone complained about how you cannot play. Why it is India in Civ V? But like the way their ability worked was once you got to population. I think it was like 4 or 6 or something like that, in each city for India, like the cheaper happiness that you got from population outweighed the penalty that you got from the new city. And from then on, it was just all bonuses. So I'm wondering if it's going to be kind of the same with this leader where, you know, like the minus 15% isn't really that big of a deal and not that strong of a deterrent to, you know, expanding further, and that, you know, the other bonuses potentially can make up for those.
They're just bringing back memories of how Majin was pointing out that Gandhi was one of like the top ICS leaders in Civ 5.
Oh yeah, he was, because like I said, once you got up to like population 4 or 5 or 6 in all of those cities, like it was nothing. It was a 50% happiness discount, and since the happiness was global, it was an awesome ability for an ICS Civ. As long as you could get up past that population, you were golden.
Yeah.
I think a lot of it stems from a knee-jerk reaction to, oh my gosh, their ability has a negative. Are you kidding me? It's explicitly stated a negative, as opposed to a negative being a choice you made, as opposed to another choice you didn't make. And when I first read it, I went, wait, what? This is outrageous. But then when you start looking at, oh, it's minus 15%. Oh, look at everything else that they're getting. Oh, the game isn't just, you know, 5-10 turns. Oh, okay. They're going for something here.
Right, and you can offset all that stuff with, like, trade routes and, you know, stuff like that as well. And if you've got a city that's going to have some really good district adjacency bonuses that's more than 6 tiles from your capital, I mean, it's still going to be a very productive city, right? Like, it's not like it's the corruption mechanic from Civ 3 or Civ 4 where, you know, a city that you found after, like, your 5th or 6th city just does completely nothing for the remainder of the game. I think that was Civ 3 that had the...
Corruption and waste,
Civ 4, I think it was just maintenance costs were higher for newer cities.
Yeah, and they scaled up, although they eventually capped.
Yeah.
Is there anything else about the Mayans, other than can we play already?
That's a bit of a simplification, but it's good enough for now.
They do not summon disasters, as I thought I read speculation about on the social media and forums. So that is apparently not what they do.
It's that soothsayer unit that's probably a scenario unit. Does that.
Yeah, I guess people saw an apocalypse game mode in New Disasters and the Maya.
And Maya, and went, it's all one pack.
Yeah, and they thought the Maya would be summoning the meteorites, and that would be their special ability.
That would be a little OP, even in single player.
You know what?
Multiplayer, holy crap.
A good comment to that would be, I think it's a little late to release that. I think about 8 years to be exact. Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah. If they release this pack for Civ 5 or something, or even Civ 4 late on, you might understand it, but, you know.
Of course, this doesn't preclude you having a Mayan soothsayer, you know, full stop, but it's just not Mayan specific. But yeah, I can see how people could come to that conclusion. And it's certainly a more worthwhile criticism than, of course, the requisite, oh my gosh, more female leaders because political correctness.
But she does actually have actual historical basis, though. This is not, they pull something out of their rear, because I don't have the book anymore, but this was something where I was reading about other cultural things back in college, and there was a woman like this, whose name I have completely forgotten, who did rise up to the rank just below High King in the Maya thing. And this is, they've based her on a real historical figure. You know, so, and that title for that rank below is where part of my username came from. So I'm like, I'm playing me kind of, sort of.
Close enough.
Well, all of the leaders in, you know, in the civilization are based off of historical people. Like even Gilgamesh, I think now there is agreement among archaeologists that he was an historic figure, you know, obviously didn't do all the things that are attributed to him in the Epic of Gilgamesh, but was an actual king of Uruk and, you know, real person on whom the stories were based, although, you know, heavily mythologized.
He may have also been named after that guy.
Yeah,
they could have gone the other way around, too, as well. Yeah, there could have been a Gilgamesh who was named after the Gilgamesh from the Epic. Because I don't think we have absolute dates on when the Epic of Gilgamesh was actually written.
Yeah, like, we've named a lot of things here in the U.S. after Lincoln, after having him as the president and stuff. So, you know, he's carved on a monument, okay? I mean, if people came across were studying America as archaeologists, they would think he was some... They would wonder if he was a mythological figure, maybe, because some of the stories about him are like, that really happened sometimes, you know?
Although I've got to say, Mackie, listening to you gush about the Maya reminds me of listening to you gush about the Australians. So, all right. So,
I enjoyed the last game's version of the Maya as well, so, you know.
So, on the Saturday cooperative games one weekend, Mackie will be the Maya. The next weekend, wait for it. Also the Maya, and then Australia for 2 weeks in a row. It's just lots of many combinations for us to enjoy.
At least I alternate between Australia and the Maori now, so, you know. I'll just have third in my rotation, right?
Oh, there you go. And a shout-out to Alan Silver, who is listening live for the first time. And speaking of the Maya, if you're playing the Maya and make it to 2012, the world blows up. I'm assuming that that's in the game. That would be an excellent apocalypse mode variation when you are playing the Maya, that everyone dies. And everyone wins or loses, depending upon your perspective. Hey, everyone wins. Everyone scores zero. Oh, gee.
We've reached a conclusion. Gesture wins.
Oh, speaking of conclusions, there are some conclusions being attempted in a certain analysis thread.
Yeah, I was going to say, speaking of nitpicking, here's the screenshot. Let's find out everything we can find out new in it, other than there's a gigantic meteor heading for the city. Oh, no.
Yeah, we get one of these every time. They usually give us some interesting insights.
Yeah, this is where we have, I mean, except for what was in the video, this is where we have some of the other information about things. This is why we know about some of these other disasters and why we know about the meteors making iron, because there's a screenshot literally of that.
I'm curious what Bermuda Triangle will actually do, because it's out in the middle of the water to a degree where you can't get it in city range in that picture.
Yeah. I would assume that ships that go through it would, you know, like, take damage or disappear, or maybe they'd get teleported to another part of the map or some crap like that.
Okay, sure, but then why would you ever go in it? Unless you're getting, like, teleported, I guess, but that seems a little fantasy-esque for a Civ game.
Well, it could be something that maybe goes invisible until, like, you actually get to it, so, like, and maybe it moves around a little bit so you don't know exactly where it is, and if you've got to sail across that ocean to get somewhere, then you got to sail through it, or risk sailing through it.
It does seem like a fantastical element along with the soothsayer.
I don't like
part.
The idea of it moving.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm just pulling stuff out of my butt right here, so I have no idea what
we're... Yeah, we're also not clear if that's a scenario-only thing as well. That could be.
That's true.
True.
I mean, it's reasonable to have it as a static thing. It's just, what's the interaction with it is my
question. If you start auto-sailing units across, or are you doing auto-exploring, are your ships going to be smart enough to avoid it? or are they just going to sail right through it?
Oh, anytime you do anything in auto in Civ, you should assume that the thing is not smart enough to do.
Auto anything.
The answer to that is always no.
Yeah, but does it treat it like an obstacle? Is it going to, if you get close to it, pop up if you have them on explorer mode, is it going to pop up an alert for, oh, this is a bad thing, you know?
I don't think so. I assume that if it's passable, then they will, you know, charge through it.
And is it going to wander around the way the hurricanes do?
Yeah, don't know.
I mean, it's, not. Yeah, according to the Well of Souls, it is a new natural wonder that is reportedly part of the base game and not one of the modes, apparently to be released with what we're getting on the 21st of May.
Oh, all right.
If it's a natural wonder, then it probably actually has, like, advantages to being near it, so.
But that's what Phil was saying. This isn't, you know, beyond Earth. We can't build a city out in the ocean by it.
Maybe it's one of those things where it, like, gives the naval unit a free promotion or something for, like, traveling.
Gives them a free promotion to teleport
beyond
to
Earth. Let's go.
We might get a space theme pack or something.
You know, as long as it's not, you know, the equivalent of a black hole. Hey, do you want to reduce the maintenance on your units? Have we got the place to go for you?
We'll just reduce your units, full stop.
We got rid of the delete button for units. You have to send them to the Bermuda Triangle if you want them gone now.
Oh, what?
It's the CPT succession method right there.
Delete the air. Oh, look, new successor. There's a pond or oasis looking wonder that people are speculating that it's the Fountain of Youth or something, which would be more fantastical elements. But hey, we've had those in the past Civ games as natural wonders type of
thing. Yeah. I mean, applying a bonus like that is well within, like, Civ precedence, but having, like, basically a wormhole in the water we haven't seen something like that in a baseline Civ game yet. Like, it wouldn't ruin the game or anything, but it would be pretty odd. I don't think we'll see that.
We'll find out next week.
Yeah.
But you heard it here first. I am predicting that that's not what it will do.
Well, if it is a natural wonder, how many games are you going to have to start in order for it to generate in your game?
Yeah.
How's it going? I'm waiting for the Bermuda Triangle. What turn are you on? I don't know. I'm still exploring the map.
It'd be funny if the Maori start in the middle of the Bermuda Triangle.
Oh, God. That's just what I need.
You know what would be really great is if when you mouse over it, it has in quotation marks, workable Krakatoa.
Yeah, because you know how often that happens. And we do have a picture of the City of Gold type of place, which I assume you're going to get a lot more commercial value out of it. Maybe it also would give a bonus for building some commercial districts near it. I don't know. It's like on the other one, if that's the Fountain of Youth, then perhaps maybe, I don't know, a food bonus or a faith bonus? I don't know. You know, decide what that would, you know, if it is the Fountain of Youth, which of those is it getting more?
I have to say, these forest fires and the aurora look very pretty.
Oh, yeah, the solar storm thing, it just makes... Normally you can see a little aurora borealis with the ice cast, but this one is just like, woo.
I think Civ 6 had a very subtle aurora effect at the poles, but it didn't have any gameplay effect. And I always thought it would be cool if the auroras, like, actually were natural wonders that are on every map at the North and South Pole, and they just kind of, like, come and go and provide, like, faith or science on the tiles where they actually appear on the turns they appear. It'd give you a cool little reason just to settle a city out there in the tundra just to, you know, check it out.
Well, yeah, because there's the research station that you can build way out there, and so it would make sense for some science bonus off that, because, hey, they could study the aurora.
Yeah. So I'm wondering if that's what this will be, if it's just a wonder that always shows up at the poles, or maybe, yeah, it is some kind of storm thing that shows up like a giant laser hurricane.
Laser hurricane.
And if anyone listening to this is wondering, how is this possibly being parsed? How specific can people be? Well, first off, a number of these screenshots came officially from 2K in 4K resolution, which of course makes zooming in on screenshots a lot better than in Civilization 5 or Civilization 4 days. Wow, look at the pixelation. There's clearly something here. But when you can get someone like Avian British on page 13 of 18 as of this recording saying, look, no one spotted these unimproved versions of corn possibly in the background of the meteor shower picture. I mean, that is the kind of level of, ooh, To which Uber Frog responded, "I cannot believe I am so excited about virtual corn." Well.
Hey, you know. Yeah, there's a lot of little, if you go through the thread, people have picked out specific parts of images where some artwork has been updated and things like that. And I don't see anything I don't like so far.
Depending what the Bermuda Triangle actually does.
Yeah. Somebody pointed out there's honey in here somewhere, so maybe that's another bonus resource.
In real life, isn't the Bermuda Triangle supposed to be like between three islands or island chains? Or is it just out in the middle of the ocean like it is in this picture?
Well, no, it would be the triangle.
In the way Civ scale things on most maps, it would be much closer, because it's pretty close to the Caribbean islands. It's not like on top of them, but it would be within a Civ city's range, normally.
Yeah.
But it is near land, supposedly, in reality.
Yeah.
Like, it's not just, because, like, again, this screenshot that's on this forum thread is just out in the middle of nowhere. Like, the nearest land looks like it's 7 tiles away to the northwest.
One of the three corners is Miami, so yeah.
Yeah, it's like the Miami to the Caribbean, I think, to some island out in the middle of the Atlantic somewhere.
It's Miami to Bermuda to Puerto Rico to Miami.
There you go. So yeah, kind of surprised that it doesn't come with little islands or something, kind of like the Galapagos does.
The Turks and Caicos are pretty close. Bahamas too.
Yeah, but like when we have the Galapagos, it auto-generates the islands that go with it, so it's not auto-generate. I mean, it can't auto-generate Florida necessarily, but.
Every game is Florida in it. Yes.
No, but it could still just like be like, oh, yeah. You spawned this wonder. Well, you gotta put in an island. And the scripting like knows where the wonders are supposed to go. So like they're all supposed to go in like certain, you know, terrain types. Like, the Galapagos also always shows up within a few tiles from land. It doesn't, I don't think I've ever seen it, like, out in the middle of nowhere by itself. Are the Galapagos even passable in Civ 6? I forget. But I don't think they are. So, like, you can't settle on it. So if it's not near, you know, within 2 or 3 tiles from land, like, it'd be like Krakatoa in Civ 5. You wouldn't be able to do anything with it. So I would have expected similar scripting with the Bermuda Triangle, where it would show up at least a few tiles from land somewhere, rather than being, you know, 7 tiles away and where, you know, no city's ever going to overlap with it. But maybe whatever effects it has, they were like, no, we can't allow a city's radius to overlap with it, so we got to put it way the heck out in the middle of the ocean. Again, without knowing what it does, it's hard to, you know, make any informed statements about that sort of thing.
Informed statements? How boring is that, Jason? I mean, really?
Yes. we like speculation out of the ass. That's what we like on Polycast.
Well, I wasn't specifying where the speculation was coming from, but sure, I mean, if we want to spell it out, then...
Oh, dear.
And then, I guess, speaking of spelling out, in terms of new information about this Frontier Pass, we also, not part of the screenshots that I'm aware of, but I guess we're going to get, what did they call them? Different kind of personas.
Rough Rider Teddy.
Yeah.
Rough Rider Teddy and something Catherine.
Catherine the
Magnificence Catherine.
Yes. Yes.
France gets 3 leaders and they're all females.
We have alternate leaders of alternate leaders.
Oh, I get it.
Yes, alternate leaders.
Oh, okay. See, we have the fantasy elements already represented, and now we have the sci-fi elements represented, because these are the leaders from the mirror universe that we find in Star Trek.
But
do they have goatees? Because that's how you know.
Well, if they're second in command, they do.
Yeah,
but these are leaders, so they're, and they're first in command, so I guess not.
Well done, Dan. Way to know that Star Trek is not South Park.
You see, kids.
It was once a great show that turned into a preaching box.
But you're not even talking about Polycast, are you? I'm just...
I was talking about Star Trek.
Oh, okay.
How it used to be good, and now it's kind of lost its footing.
Yeah, I would agree, but unfortunately this is not Star Trek cast.
Although you could tempt Stan.
Yeah, I'm trying to. No, I'm not gonna take the bait this time. However masterfully it was done. Rough Rider Teddy.
We have to say more provocative things to get him going.
Rough Rider Teddy
is better than Picard. Go, Dan.
he's better at Picard at doing some things that are not as desirable.
Sure.
There we go. Rough Rider Teddy excels at keeping the peace on his home continent, and Magnificence Catherine can use luxuries to overwhelm the world with culture and tourism.
Wasn't Teddy Roosevelt already supposed to do that?
Yeah. So.
Yeah, I was like, wait, it held up.
That's really saying something without saying too much of anything, honestly.
And doesn't France kind of already do the cultural overwhelming? It's like, do you need to make France, are you trying to make non-Eleanor France the equivalent of England France, or England, you, England Eleanor, jeez, wow.
I think Firaxis and Duque are just trying to make France that much more a target-rich environment for invasion, quite honestly.
Yeah. So
target number one.
To put a larger target on France for us, because it's already had a pretty good-sized target.
France is like, oh gosh, where's the peace-only option from Civ 4? Mark, we can't get that back. No.
France, like, can we become Canada now?
Oh, and I did see that from some people in the conversation, which is, oh, you know, it would be nice if, say, Canada had been part of this DLC pack, because then I could have not paid for it, because it's awful. It's like, wow, throwing shade, well done. Some other civs got rolled in there, too, but I saw Canada getting thrown under the bus for that, and I was like, well, now everyone's a critic.
Well, wow. Sure, Canada's not a very strong civ, so get wrecked.
It's true. We're not strong. We're super duper strong. Yeah. Yeah. All right.
I do like
just ask the Egyptians.
All right. Let's guess what age we all are on out at recess as we get into this. I don't even know if it's an argument, honestly. I don't even think it qualifies that. I think that's giving arguments a bad name. Let's see. What else from Civilization Six, New Frontier, which, by the way, New Frontier, that's not the final frontier, which is good, because, I don't know, I'm not talking about Star Trek movies. No, I'm moving on. I'm fine.
The best Star Trek movie, Go Dan.
The best Star Trek movie, it's somehow actually being released and still allowed to be distributed. Anyway, yeah. I think it's fair to say that, I don't know if it's fair to say, but I think 2K and Firaxis have definitely been taking in all of the, you know, how long can we not say anything and still have people talking about the game? And, well, you have an answer, certainly. And I think it's good that there's new content coming that's not just coming from the modding community, and that's not a slight against the modding community. It's just, hello, what is going on? Just tell us that something is going on. And to come back to the last episode, this is also tying into the damned if you do and damned if you don't argument that I maintain, because although I think this is better, this does not stop people from saying, oh, well, now that I have information, I'm going to tell you everything that's wrong with it. But I think they're in the vocal minority. I do think that it's understandably the community is excited for this, to know that 2K and Firaxis have not just been shrugging their shoulders and, let's see what other platforms we can get Civ 6 on, and then that's that, you know. It's, no, they've gone back and said, okay, what more can we do? What civilizations can we add that we had in the past? How does that play within Civilization 6? What more can we do to build upon this game? And I'm looking forward to it. It's nice to have a map.
Introducing Civilization 6 for Raspberry Pi.
Well, eventually, when the Raspberry Pi gets strong enough, but you know.
Ooh. Now I just want to talk about how Peach Pi is superior. Anyway, that's not this podcast either, apparently.
Not podcast.
I prefer Apple.
Now I want to get into conversations about what kind of apples you use, and this is not Cooking Cast. Oh my gosh, all these different things that this show is not.
Yeah, there's a few answers to that, and that's just apple pie, and we eat other pies, and oh dear.
Let's see. Checking through here, was there anything else? I mean, for Grand Columbia, there is, oh, we think we know that the leader is Simon Bolivar, based on some screenshots, it's been said. We have an idea that they have a unique unit, and this is what the unique unit is probably called, but we don't know what it does yet.
Yeah, Will of Souls suggested it's a cavalry replacement.
Oh, something to look forward to if you survive that long in the game. Okay, well.
Oh, you play the Maya. Then you spam out archers like Nubia does and go kick people's butt.
Oh, I thought
Maya is strong as the archers, but you know.
Oh, I thought, Mackie, you were going to say something like, or if you have a later era start, which, of course, Dan refuses to do.
That too, yeah.
Well, there is also that.
Objectively, those are the best starts.
As established in the last episode.
Yeah.
And there's even more minutiae of detail. Like, for example, do you want to know the name of the volcano that the Mayans tend to start near and the name of their river? Yes, that has been gleaned from screenshot analysis and documented on fan sites like Civilization Fanatic Center. So
yeah, and we're losing Palenque as a city-state because that's now one of the Mayan cities. But that's why we got the Vatican. So they took out a scientific city and replaced it with a religious. Hold up.
Oh.
I mean, just in, yeah, I know you can make political commentary out of that, but just in terms of balance.
Yeah. Yeah, we have no idea with the Vatican to what its ability is yet.
Okay, really? The Vatican's a trade city state, that's it.
No, I was going to say militaristic. Wait, what?
Militaristic is definitely the most likely. There wouldn't be any EPR issues over that.
No, no.
Oh. And of course, down my mind, but no, we're not talking about Crusades. No, this is not, no, we're not doing that, no. Actually, what I meant was we don't know what the ability of the Vatican City will be if you become their suzerain, as opposed to what type they are. Something that, I gotta say something to do with your religious units. I don't know. It's, you know, I'm just gonna go out on a limb.
Free missionaries or something, or I...
You get a free great profit if you're the first to discover it. Nice.
Oh no, okay, see, that's a little okay.
Or maybe they just charge all the players who meet them tithes.
Wait a minute, that's not how this works. City states give things to me, not the other way around.
And then their city turns more and more gold as the game goes on.
Yeah, that part I would believe. The later you get, or if you convert them to your religion, they give you tons of gold per turn or something.
Looking at the chat from youtube.com/user/thepolicast/live, while this is live, /TG, I'm back, but I came late, so I'll listen from the start. Oh, okay. Yes, Alan, we did talk about the observatory. Firaxis is starting to get some competition now with Old World and Humankind. They need to keep putting out more. And actually, interesting you bring that up, because what
there was
part-
also John Schaefer's game, at the Gates.
At the Gates. It's interesting you bring that up, Alan, because on episode 360, which initially got bumped to 361, which is now probably going to be bumped again here, we actually, we're going to talk about, Old World from, Soren Johnson, and we have talked about Humankind. I think it was before my tenure here as a recurring guest that Humankind was talked about. But certainly there is competition for our attention, for Civ's attention, and that includes things that are, oh, everyone's sitting down. Not computer gaming related. Yes, I know.
Is Old World actually released yet? Or is it like still in early access?
Early access, but I think the general public can purchase it in early access now, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. But it's on the Epic Games Store, so nobody cares about it.
I wasn't sure if Epic did the early access stuff or not.
Yeah, but for everybody, and from when I've seen streams of it being played, everybody has said, basically, like, this is early access, this isn't like the actual game, what? You know, because it's at such a good quality level already, you know. So yeah, when it actually comes out, full thing.
I had put off getting Outer Wilds and Outer Worlds because of the Epic exclusivity, but if Old World is Epic exclusive, that might be the thing that finally gets me to install the Epic Store. Ugh.
You don't have to, because Tim Sweeney already said that he bought the games for everybody. So you can just pirate it and feel no guilt.
Oh, well, okay.
Nice, Gannis. I approve.
Good to have you back.
Well, I think
I take no responsibility for suing.
I mean, 2K and Firaxis are no doubt paying attention to games like Old World and Humankind and At the Gates and just other titles in general that are keeping people's attention. And I think we're taking that into account. I don't think we have to worry about, because actually hearing early access and the understandable negative connotation that can come with it, kind of like, oh, you know, consumer beware what you're probably getting yourself into. I've seen some of that too. oh, this DLC season pass, this is just so that they can release stuff that's not finished yet and make money, and it's early access, and then we solve it for them as we play the game. And it's, oh, man. I mean, you know, I guess if that's what bothers you in life, you're doing pretty good. There, I can generate hate mail for the show now.
It's literally a wretched hive of first world problems.
It's true.
Yeah.
It really is.
A little more tangential.
The best kind of problems to have.
We also have a third Crusader Kings coming out soon, too, don't we?
Yeah. So, and with how these games are starting to lean in some influence from CK2 into them, that's more relevant than ever.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't want to call it a grand strategy renaissance, but, I mean, I don't remember a time in my lifetime when there was, like, this many grand strategy games on the market. I mean, even going back to, like, late 90s, early 2000s, we had, like, you know, like, one or two space games and Civ and, like, maybe one or two other games. That was about it.
It's helpful when you can...
A little bit of a golden age.
Yeah, it's helpful when you can have decent games being available to many people coming from smaller studios as compared to just, you know, the big guys like 2K.
Yeah, and that's actually always been the case on Steam, because you go back and there were things like, Galactic Civilizations and a few other, like, big space 4X games that were available on Steam from indie developers, which I never got around to playing. There was Endless Space, a few others, Master of Orion reboot. But, yeah, we're finally getting some more of the space ones were always popular. Those never went away. But the, like, historical-themed ones, like, other than Civ, like, there was, like, nothing until, like, a year ago. Now, all of a sudden, there's, like, five of them. Oh, Dawn of Man as well. That's another indie one.
Well, I think that leans a little more towards a city-building type.
Yeah, you're right. It's more of a real-time city builder. But it was still, you know, worth checking out.
Speaking of shoutouts from games, a couple of more shoutouts in response to some listeners. In response to episode 360 on YouTube, someone who goes by the user name Music says, keep entertaining your fans. And from LGH themselves, with almost 47,000 subscribers, wow, kudos to you. Big up, more content, please. Well, since you said please, I guess we'll continue making episodes. Since you threw that in there, I guess.
We do the best we can.
Well, we can with what we've got, which sometimes it gets a little bit thin on the ground, but then we manage to find things, so.
Looks like we'll have plenty of content for new episodes for the upcoming year, at least. And not just Civ stuff, but like we were just talking about, a lot of other games that we might also talk about as well.
And I think some people listening to this are wondering, okay, you guys have talked about the roadmap, you've talked about what some people are saying in terms of whether they're going to go for this new Frontier Pass or whether they're not, but you haven't said what your intentions are, panelists, whether you intend to get into this or not, although I feel like I have, which is the answer is yes. And part of it, some might say, oh, well, Dan, you're just going to get it anyway because it has Civ in the title. And it's not so much that I'm getting it because it has Civ in the title. It's because it has Civ in the title that I'm paying attention to it. And I like what I'm seeing. I'm willing to also entertain this notion of a DLC collection over the year and not be kind of like old man quick and say back in my day we had expansion packs and we liked it, dang it. This is the equivalent of that. And the fact that I can see laid out that they have a plan in place, it might not necessarily be the plan that I would have devised, but that's okay. I'm willing to give it a chance because of where Civilization VI is at right now, and yes, the reputation of 2K and Firaxis for addressing fan concerns, not necessarily always the best choices, but we do eventually get answers to these things. And, you know, we're just going to take it one DLC piece at a time.
Yeah, if Civ 7 has nothing but season passes like this and doesn't have any actual expansion packs, that would be the point where I would drop off of the series, potentially. But, like, I can live with because we already have two fully featured expansions. You could ask questions about whether or not all of this content could have been bundled into one expansion and whether or not that expansion would have been $20 or $30 or $40. Again, I don't think we've seen pricing points for this stuff yet, so I don't know how much the full pass costs. Is it going to be $20? Is it going to be $30? Is it going to be $40? If it's $40 or more, I think that might be a little bit expensive for what's being offered here, considering that Gathering Storm sold for $40, and that was a full expansion pack that had, you know, eight civs, alternate leader, and, like, entirely new game mechanics. So, you know, that I actually play. not just scenarios and alternate game modes that I might never play. So, I do see some red flags here, especially with, like, the alternate versions of existing leaders, where it's kind of trending towards microtransaction territory, and that worries
me. Yeah, that's a big...
Because that opens up the door to, like, 99 cent, $1.99 alternate skins and stuff like that, entering into the game in the future. And that's a slippery slope that I really don't want to see this series go down. I've always, for years and years and years now, held up Civilization as a game series that does its expansions and DLC, like, well, you know, maybe not perfect, but very well. And, I would hate to see that finally change because, 2K released a survey asking for forgiveness instead of permission years ago.
I can hear that reservation given that they have announced that these Persona packs come with, yes, a new leader model and background. I'm like, oh no, but the new gameplay bonuses and an updated agenda that reflect the changes to the leader's personality. I'm hoping that that will not mean just, hey, here's, you know, microtransaction DLC reskinning that really doesn't get you much of anything. But at the same token, these are available, as 2K has announced, exclusively to owners of the new Frontier Pass and will be delivered with the second add-on pack. So it's kind of going into that territory, and I recognize that hesitation, and I'm hoping that this is not how new leaders will come about, because it does describe it as a quote-unquote exclusive bonus, but they want to test the waters with it? Okay. And yeah, more in general.
It's impossible to know for sure until we see what they do with Civ 7. Like I said, if Civ 7 comes out, even if they sell some DLC leaders and Civs, like, right after the game comes out, they did the same thing with Civ 6, Civ 5, you know, if a year after Civ 7 comes out, if they're not doing expansions and they're still just selling, you know, leader packs and alternate skins and stuff like that, and, like, you know, as long as they don't go into the route of, like, in-game purchases and starting having friggin' loot boxes that drop, you know, new wigs for George Washington and crap like that. If it goes in that direction, then yeah, I mean, I will be out. But I mean, this is acceptable, right? Like I said, it's got some worrying trends, but, you know, it's too early to really judge it for sure, in my opinion.
I think you really could regard this as Civilization VI, New Frontier expansion pack being released, quote unquote, March 2021. Because that's when all this is to be out.
And it comes down to pricing, right? Because if they want to sell it for $30 or $40, which was the prices for Rise and Fall and Gathering Storm, I'm not sure if the value is there. But, like I said, it's, you know, it's not the, this is not totally egregious. I've seen much worse from many other games, so.
And also, this could keep us distracted for the next year until they're ready to talk about Civ 7, so also acceptable.
Nope, you heard it here first. You heard it here first. Civilization 7 news coming in March 2021. Thanks, Mackie.
Hey,
I would hope for actually a new version of Colonization, or maybe even a sequel to Beyond Earth before Civ 7 comes out. I hope we get at least a few years before they, you know, shove a...
Yeah, since we still have new stuff coming into it, even if they put this in, and then we have a couple of years before they do something, you know, it's adding to the longevity of the game.
Yeah, I think given this release schedule, I think it's probably safe to say that we are still at least 2 years away from seeing a Civilization 7, assuming that they don't go the route of doing, you know, Civ 6 Colonization or Beyond Earth 2 or buy the rights to Alpha Centauri. Hint, hint, wink, wink.
Get them back, please.
Or maybe even doing a other game. Maybe Firaxis tries their hand at a Space 4X that's actually in space, not on just a planet that's different colors than Earth.
They did. It was called Starships.
Yes, in Myers Starships.
Yeah, okay. Well, I mean, not a multiple.
On the pricing for New Frontier in the chat, Alan Silver says $40 is what I heard. I forget where I saw that. And $42 is you buying the packs individually, but you miss some content.
$40 was what I heard, and if that is the price point, I personally think it's a little steep, again, considering that that's what they charge for Gathering Storm, and Gathering Storm had the same number of civs, same number of leaders, and was an actual expansion pack. Again, I don't know if I'm going to play any of these alternate game modes. I will probably load a couple of them up just to try them out, but I've never played the scenarios much before. I don't expect that's going to change much. I am old and set in my ways.
I mean, Apocalypse game mode, I'm like, from what I read, I'm like, no, I don't think so. Secret Society's game mode? Who knows? Plus, they're going to be releasing new game mode 4 times. So, I'm teasing, of course.
We're all going to have to do a thing where we're going to look at what does and doesn't come with it if we buy the pass or if we buy it in bits, and whether that things we're going to miss by not buying the pass is worth the extra money for the pass.
Yeah, because I can see some people saying, oh, these Persona packs available exclusively in the new Frontier Pass, which means paying up front. Yeah, no thank you. Like that to me does not make me want to buy the pass because that's that particular exclusive bonus. I'm like, I could take it or leave it in that case.
Put this in perspective, like, I don't even like pre-orders in general anymore. Like, the moment games started moving towards digital downloads and digital delivery as opposed to a physical disc that you had to go to a store to pick up, I thought, like, pre-ordering became obsolete. Like, there's no need to pre-order if there isn't actually a risk of limited supply. So, for years now, I've been just opposed to the idea of pre-ordering in general. So, the season passes and stuff like that is basically just pre-ordering DLC. So, on the same grounds, I'm not a big fan of that, you know, kind of model either.
I know I would cringe if it was a season pass and it was, hey, so all this content's going to reside on 2K server and we're going to give you access. No. That would definitely get me to go somewhere else. That I will say up front. But we're not there and we're not there yet. And I think they tried that with that Civilization Online thing. And well, I believe that's now in the dustbin.
Nightmare flashbacks to trying SimCity 2013 on EA Origin.
Oh, right. You see, kids, games used to come in these physical copies in, called boxes. And what you would do...
Yes, Dan. There's plenty of retro channels. The kids are aware. Some of the kids are young enough still to have seen boxes. Okay, come on.
I'm sure they saw them in a museum. I get it.
Yeah, they used to put games in those.
Yeah.
LPs and cassette tapes, like, making a hipster comeback these days.
Because of Stranger Things, I think, is the big influence on 80s stuff coming back.
Even before Stranger Things.
Yeah, there's a little bit, but that's like people who
might
not have...
back. It would not be the 80s that I would choose, but it's just me.
You choose to bring sexy back? What?
No, Justin.
Over the 80s, maybe. I don't know. Although you're making me reconsider, but...
Ooh, I'd bring the 90s back before the 80s, but...
I would, maybe. Too.
I wouldn't say no to the 80s if they were, I don't know, offered up against maybe some other decades.
Yeah, because the 90s is the beginning of the internet when it was still like the Wild Wild West and everything wasn't so,
Yeah, the beginning of the consumer internet, yeah. And also when that's also the decade the first Civilization was released, so clearly it was a good decade.
Dan's biased.
Also, for people listening, what was this Alpha Centauri mention that Jason was talking about 2K trying to buy? Well, speaking of 1999, Alpha Centauri and the Alien Crossfire expansion pack, Civ in Space, very highly regarded. Electronic Arts still owns the franchise. They're not doing anything with it. I don't know, kind of at this point, it's, no, we don't want to do anything with it. You can't do anything with it either, so meh.
Yeah.
Like,
in 20 years, they haven't even bought somebody else's 4X game and just branded it Alpha Centauri or something. They've done nothing. It's like they also have, like, the rights for the Ultima series stuff, and all they do is sit on the, at this point, ancient online game version, and nobody could ever make a new Ultima, so the original Ultima guy had to just go and do his own thing, because he can't get the rights to his own stuff back.
You think that after the popularity of, like, Skyrim, they'd have been like, hey, do we have anything that's like Skyrim? Hey, what's this Ultima thing? Let's make a game on that.
Proper modern 3D Ultima, I should say, because there was the Underworld games. But yeah, why did you not do this?
Yeah.
Idiot.
Ugh, EA. Ugh.
You EA-idiots. Nobody in here is going to stop being mad about EA anytime soon, I think.
No. Although it's another UC Kids moment, because at one point they weren't a bad company.
I know.
I remember going back to the 90s.
Believe it or not, there was a time where, like, Madden games were contenders for Game of the Year. Like, not Sports Game of the Year, but Game of the Year.
Once upon a time.
What, Madden, like, 99, Madden 2000? Those were when they introduced the franchise mode. That was, like, mind-blowing. People were literally talking about those games as being Game of the Year material.
Ah, memories.
Yeah. You know what? I'm just waiting for...
Wow.
Those tinted memories.
I'm just waiting for...
corporate.
I'm just waiting for people to talk about Polycast as Podcast of the Year. That's what I'm waiting for.
Well, we've talked about it before, and that might have to be good enough.
Yeah. I mean, other people talking about Polycast being the Podcast of the Year. Fair enough. Let's qualify that.
If you put enough money in someone's pocket, I'm sure you can make it happen, but it's probably not worth.
Cool, Dan, on the forums, for people to vote for their Podcast of the Year out of the options of Polycast Season 13, Polycast Season 14, etc.
Dan would love to rig a poll and find out what your favorite season of Polycast is.
Ooh. And don't say one, because without one, none of the other seasons could happen. Oh, please. So I guess in that thinking, we have Civilization VI to thank for the New Frontier Pass. We have Civilization VI to thank... we have Civilization I to thank or not to thank for the New Frontier Pass by that line of thinking. Well done, Sid.
We have the original Civ to thank for everything that's going on right now.
Whoa, that's...
I mean, okay.
Whoa, wait a minute. I guess
everything contained in this podcast and relating, you know, that kind of thing, not...
Oh, okay.
Not the other shenanigans going on. That's not Sid's fault at all.
Okay, I could see Sid slowly making his way to the door, not wanting to make eye contact with anyone.
He's like in a lab, just cackling. We'll see who colonizes you this time.
Speaking of this time.
Act of secrecy.
On that note.
All right, everyone, get out.
No magic.
Okay, magic.
I actually don't remember what episode number this is, so I'll just go with episode 470.
I will be in 109 more episodes.
Okay, so thank you for joining us on podcast episode 361. I'm the B&T team, and I was joined by Canis Albinus.
Hopefully I'll be back again soon.
Makalua?
We hope so too.
Mega Bears fan?
I'm awake now.
Special guest co-host Dan Q.
470 minus 361 is...
Yes.
We can math.
I mean, I did it already.
I was just checking to see if anybody was paying attention. It was a pop quiz.
Yeah, well.
At the end of class, no less.
Best time.
You an end of class.
Only noobs dislike pop quizzes anyway. It's all fine.
Civilization 4, 5, 6, and Beyond Earth Clips. Copyright Take-Two Interactive. Copyright The Polycast at thepolycast.net.